or giggle fests. I'd made out with guys in the darkness of the parking lot, guys who tasted like milkshakes and French fries. And it was where we'd all gathered the morning after Palmer slept with Tom for the first time, getting every detail over shared plates of pancakes and waffles. It was early enough that I was able to get parking out front. I climbed the 7 steps and pulled open the metal-handled door, walking past the candy machines and the arcade games, one of which, Honor Quest, Bree had become obsessed with 2 years ago. The "Please Seat Yourself" sign was facing out, so I pushed my sunglasses on top of my head and scanned the restaurant. Our normal booth was taken by a family, screaming kids and parents ignoring them as they read the paper. I looked around for our second favorite booth and saw Palmer sitting in it alone. I made a beeline over to her. I was still feeling jangly and on the verge of panicking. But somehow, knowing I would be able to talk about it with her was making things seem a little bit better. "Hey," I said, sliding into the booth across from her. There was what looked like a half-eaten plate of waffles, and what I was assuming was a vanilla Coke, Palmer's usual, sat in front of her. "Hi," she said as she looked at me, surprised, her blue eyes wide. "You got here fast? Did you speed?" "Not exactly," I said, taking a menu from where they were stacked on the table, opening it, then putting it back immediately, realizing I didn't even have to look. I got about 4 things at the diner, and this was not a place to experiment. There were things that were safe to get, all breakfast foods, mozzarella sticks, burgers, sandwiches. And then there were things that you should never, ever order at a diner, despite the fact that the menu was the size of a small phone book. Palmer loved to dare people, and last year she'd challenged Toby to get the $7 lobster. When it had arrived, it had looked so suspicious that she'd called off the bet immediately, before anyone got food poisoning. "I was over on Sound View," I started. "And..."
"Morning, Andy,"
Tom said as he approached the table with a smile. Then he looked at where I was sitting and his face fell.
"Does this mean I've lost my seat?"
"Afraid so," Palmer said, patting the spot next to her.
"Scoot in, babe."
We had a very particular seating arrangement at the diner. Palmer and I sat across from each other, closest to the jukebox. Bree next to me and Toby across from her. When one of us wasn't there, Tom got to sit across from Palmer. But if we were all there, he had to pull a chair up to the end of the table. He didn't really complain about it, maybe because he understood that this seating arrangement had come before he had. Tom had, over the last 3 years, pretty much become a de facto member of our group. But he was always really respectful of the fact that we were still a foursome, and seemed to have a sixth sense for when we needed girl time. Tom slid next to his girlfriend, kissed her on the cheek, and then turned to me.
"So what's going on?" he asked.
He looked down at his own plate, which had about 2 bites left on it.
"Pancake?"
he offered, and I shook my head. I'd known Thomas Harrison. He always did a bit about how nobody could ever tell if he had 2 last names or 2 first names. Since 3rd grade, I'd never really thought about him all that much. He was the quiet, neatly dressed kid who sat in the middle of the classroom and was in every single play in elementary and middle school. Usually the character part, but occasionally the lead. If I'd thought about it, I would have assumed he was gay, based on nothing other than the most superficial of reasons, and the fact that I'd never seen him with a girl. But on the 3rd day of high school, I'd been at my locker, trying to figure out what I'd done with my biology book, when Palmer had grabbed my arm.
"Who is that?"
she whispered,
her voice higher than normal.
"Who is who?" I asked, trying to look around Tom Harrison, who was carefully placing his books in his locker, for whoever it was Palmer was talking about.
"Him," she'd whispered, her nails digging into my arm, and I saw she was looking right at Tom, her cheeks flushed. They'd started going out a week later, and they'd been together ever since.
"Well," I started, leaning forward, ready to tell them what happened. My mind had been spinning the whole drive over, unable to attach to anything concrete that would help me figure out the next step. I hoped that in the course of telling them, something might hit me.
"So, this morning my phone rings at 7 a.m. and..."
I stopped suddenly, noticing that while Palmer was wearing normal clothes, jeans and a tank top, Tom was wearing a collared shirt underneath a brightly patterned red and white Christmas sweater. The collared shirt wasn't that unusual. Tom usually looked like he was attending something slightly more formal than the rest of us. But the sweater was.
"Tom, why are you dressed like a holiday card?"
Tom opened his mouth to reply, as Carly, one of the waitresses who tolerated us, appeared at the table, pen already poised above her order pad.
"Ready, doll?"
Everyone Carly waited on got a nickname. She always called Toby Freckles, which Toby was less than thrilled about.
"Can I get the number one with crisp bacon and a Diet Coke?" I asked.
"White or wheat?"
Carly asked without missing a beat.
"White, just the tiniest bit toasted, like more warmed than toasted, and hash browns instead of home fries."
"Gotcha,"
Carly said as she turned to go.
"And can you make the bacon really crisp?"
Palmer interjected, leaning slightly across the table.
"Like more crisp than you would think. Cook it to an amount of crispness you think that nobody would ever want, and bring that out and it'll be perfect."
"Sure," Carly said, but still in the same tone that she'd taken my toast order, so I wasn't sure she'd actually listen to any of this.
"Thanks," I said to Palmer once Carly had departed.
"I'm just trying to save us all some time," she said with a grin. "Remember the bacon incident of last May?"
Tom shuddered.
"I do."
I rolled my eyes and reached over for Palmer's water glass to take a sip.
"It wasn't an incident," I said, then focused back on Tom.
"But why are you celebrating Christmas in June?"
"The holidays just aren't the holidays without a country table ham," Tom said to me earnestly. "This year, that's what I want for Christmas."
I just stared at him for a moment.
"I don't understand."
"It's for an audition,"
Palmer explained, and I could hear the pride in her voice. It was one of the reasons that they worked so well together. The two of them were beyond supportive of each other, and they both still seemed to think they'd won the lottery by being with each other. If they weren't Palmer and Tom, it would have been pretty insufferable.
"In New York," she added.
"Oh," I said, feeling like things were starting to make more sense. Tom had gotten an actual agent when someone had seen him in last fall's production of You Can't Take It With You. Now he went into New York City pretty frequently to audition, clutching the headshot we'd all helped him choose. He'd booked some regional commercials, but so far, nothing national.
"But why are you dressed like that now?" I asked. "Aren't you hot?"
"A little bit," he admitted, taking a sip of his water. "But I really want to get into character. Like, why does David, I've decided his name is David, care about ham so much? Why does he want a ham for Christmas? Is something else missing in David's life? Probably, right?"
"And the sweater helps you come up with answers to these questions?" It can't hurt, Tom said, taking another long drink.
Anyway, Palmer said, turning to me.
So, you got a call this morning at 7 a.m.
Right, I said. It's a Baltimore area code, so of course I answer, and...
We're here!
I turn to see Bree arriving at the foot of the table with a grumpy-looking Toby in tow. Tom sighed. I've lost my seat again, haven't I?
Afraid so, Palmer said cheerfully, as Tom slid out of the booth and went off in search of a chair.
Hi, Bree said as she slid in next to me.
Sorry we're late. I literally had to drag Toby out of bed.
I looked across at Toby, who was now slumped against Palmer, wearing what were unmistakably Bree's clothes. Nice ones, looking like she was about 3 seconds away from falling asleep again.
Hey, Tobes, I said.
It's so early, she moaned, rubbing her eyes. And why does nobody at this table have coffee?
We'll get you some coffee, Bree said, already looking around for a waitress. You big baby.
Babies don't need coffee, Toby said, burrowing her head into Palmer's arm, who gave her hair a distracted pat.
Because people actually let them sleep.
You needed to get up, Bree said firmly. You have to be at work in an hour, and I'm not taking the blame if you fall asleep and crash into a Monet.
I frowned.
Wait, what?
Here you go, Carly said, returning with my food and Diet Coke, not even batting an eye at the fact that two new people had arrived at the table while one had vanished.
Get you anything, Freckles?
Coffee, Toby said, sitting up a little straighter.
And waffles? She asked, looking at Bree. Toby almost never ordered anything just for herself. She always wanted someone, usually Bree, to share stuff with her, and was forever asking if we should get something for the table.
I'd have waffles, Bree said, nodding. Can I get a black tea?
Coming up,
Carly said, disappearing again. I looked down at my plate. I was thrilled to see that the bacon looked practically black, and realized how hungry I was. I had just speared a bite of my scrambled eggs when Tom appeared again, hauling a chair and looking out of breath.
Sorry, he said, his face now matching his sweater. I'm back.
Bree frowned at him and gestured to his outfit.
Okay, what's going on here?
That's David, I said, as I crunched into a piece of bacon. And he really wants a ham for Christmas.
The holidays just aren't the holidays, Tom started, but Palmer interrupted.
Tom has an audition this afternoon, she explained, then turned back to me. But Andy was about to tell us what's going on with her.
Wait, who wants a ham for Christmas? Toby asked, sounding more awake than she had yet this morning.
I mean, that's just weird.
Exactly, Tom said, leaning toward Toby. That's the question I've been asking myself.
Andy?
Palmer interrupted, loud, and everyone turned to me. I set my fork down, took a restorative drink of my Diet Coke, and told them about what had happened that morning. When I finished, my eggs were looking decidedly cold, and Bree and Toby's waffles had arrived.
But I don't understand how they could do that, Palmer said as she leaned across the table toward me.
Are they allowed to cancel your acceptance like that?
Apparently, I said, and I could feel my heart start to race again.
Which means I have nothing, no plans, nothing lined up. I mean...
Topher's words from the night before were suddenly ringing in my ears. Everything good had been gone when he'd started looking a month ago, which meant I was so, so screwed.
This Dr. Rizzoli guy sounds like a dick, Toby said.
Totally, Bree agreed.
I mean, Toby huffed as she angrily speared a bite of waffle. To not even give you a heads up?
It's not cool, Tom agreed from the end of the table.
Are you going to eat all your bacon?
I pushed my plate across to him, wondering if Tom was really hungry or if he was trying to get in character as pork-loving David.
Wait, but that means you get to be here, Toby said, brightening. That's great.
I shot her a look and she shrugged.
I mean, not so much for you, but it's great for us.
It's not great, I said, my voice coming out louder than I'd expected it to, and the family in our normal booth glanced over at me.
Everything is wrecked. I'm never going to be able to find anything good now, which means there will be this gap on my resume. During the summer, I needed something the most.
I could feel my heart start to pound harder, like just saying these things out loud had made them more real.
She's spiraling, Toby whispered.
I see that, Bree whispered back.
Andy, Palmer said, nudging my foot with hers underneath the table until I looked up at her. Tell me about the cute guy with the dog.
That's not important, I snapped.
What did he look like? Palmer asked, leaning forward, nudging me again.
I don't know, I said, not wanting to think about the guy right now when there were many more important things I had to deal with. I had a feeling Palmer was just doing this to try and distract me, so I could calm down, but when she nudged me harder, this one bordering on a kick, I relented, knowing if I didn't answer her, she'd just keep on doing it.
Fine. Dark hair, glasses, his shirt said something about droids.
Both Bree and Tom looked up at that.
Star Wars? Bree asked, looking impressed.
I like him already, Tom said decisively.
Can we focus here? Toby asked, raising her voice. If Andy's in town, that means we're all here for the summer for once.
I looked around the table and realized this was true. Last year, Bree had spent all of July visiting relatives in India, terrified she was going to lose her memory because of the side effects warning on her anti-malarial medicine. We'd probably had more fun with that than we should have, making up things that hadn't happened, pretending she should know what we were talking about, then acting overly concerned when she got confused. Bree, understandably, hadn't brought us back any souvenirs from that trip. And the year before that, Palmer had spent the first half of the summer doing a service program, building houses in New Orleans, and come back with a drawl she didn't lose until November.
You know what that means you'll be here for, right? Palmer asked me, raising her eyebrows.
It took me a moment, but then I sat up straighter, seeing the first silver lining of that morning.
The scavenger hunt?
The scavenger hunt! Palmer agreed, banging her palm down on the table and setting the plates rattling. For the past 5 years, Palmer had organized a scavenger hunt, usually taking place in August, when she felt things needed to be spiced up a little. Scavenger hunts were an Alden family tradition, and as soon as we'd all become friends, Palmer had started organizing her own. I'd missed last year's, when I'd been stuck in bed with the stomach flu, getting photo updates so I could see just how much fun everyone was having. The year before, I'd lost by a single point, something that still irritated me whenever I thought about it.
I'm sorry, are you referring to my greatest victory? Tom asked with a grin. How many points did I win by last summer?
19, Toby and Bree said in unison.
And I've already started working on this year's list, Palmer said, mostly to me. It's going to be great.
Okay, I said, nodding,
It wasn't like it was making up for missing my summer program, but it was something, at least.
When?
I attributed my loss 2 years ago to the fact that I'd spent far too long trying to get the impossible high points items, rather than just getting more of the easier low points ones. I wondered if I still had the list somewhere, so that I could use it to start refining my strategy.
Just plan on August for the moment, Palmer said, smiling down the table at Tom. We have to look at the performance schedule.
Oh, right, I said, nodding, feeling my stomach sink.
The play.
I realized as I looked around that all my friends' plans were set already, and had been for weeks now. Bree, our resident cinephile, was working at the Palace Movie Theater. Toby was volunteer docenting at the Pierce, the art museum in town, which I now realized explained Bree's Monet reference. Tom was acting in the community theater play, and Palmer was stage managing it.
So, everyone else has a plan, I said, looking around, realizing that for the first time I could remember, I was the one at loose ends with no solution for this in sight.
You'll find something, Palmer said confidently to me as she took a sip of her Coke.
It'll all work out in the end.
This was classic Palmer. She was hardwired for optimism and seemed absolutely incapable of not seeing the bright side. All the Aldens were like that. They didn't dwell. They looked for solutions, made some snacks, and kept moving forward.
Okay, I said, sitting up straight, figuring that maybe I could learn something from her. I have to fix this. I needed some sort of plan. I didn't even care if it was a good plan right now, just so long as it was something concrete. I have to do something. I can't just hang out all summer.
We always need people to help build sets, Tom interjected from the end of the table.
I mean, it doesn't pay or anything, and some prior set-building experience is preferred, but I could put in a good word for you.
And all the really good internships are gone, I continued, not letting myself get distracted by this.
Same thing with summer programs and volunteering slots.
Do we need to be here for this? Toby whispered to Bree.
So I need to do something else, I said, my fingers itching for a pen so I could start brainstorming. Something that might not look as good per se, but something I could spin if I needed to.
I don't think we do need to be here for this, Bree whispered back, and Toby shook her head.
Told you.
I need...
I looked around the diner, like it might provide some answers for me, and blinked when I saw that maybe it had. There was a bulletin board by the door that I'd never paid much attention to, covered in business cards, missing pet posters, and help wanted flyers.
Bree, I said, nudging her. I need to get out.
Why? She asked, even as she slid out so I could get past her.
Can I finish the bacon? Tom called as I practically ran up to the bulletin board and started scanning it.
There was nothing hugely promising right away, but there were a few that looked like possibilities. I pulled out my phone and started taking pictures of the flyers.
Looking for summer tutor. Must be proficient in French. Computer help required. Will pay money.
Mother's helper needed. 30 hours a week.
None of them would be perfect, and I'd stopped taking French in 8th grade, but it was something. I'd started to put my phone away when my eye landed on one all the way in the corner.
Need a summer job? The top of it read in 24-point type.
I leaned a little closer.
Great pay, flexible hours, work experience that will look great on any application or resume. Call or email soon.
There was a phone number and an email address listed beneath it. I read it over again, wondering if I'd missed what this job actually was. But there was no explanation, which actually made me a little wary.
It reminded me of that time Palmer's sister Megan was home from college on Christmas break and took what she thought was a job selling knives that actually turned out to be part of an elaborate pyramid scheme.
"Find anything?" Bree asked, and I turned my head to see she was leaning over my shoulder, looking at the bulletin board as well. I nodded, then tapped the vague one in the corner. Bree read the ad, then frowned.
"But what is it?"
"I don't know," I said, pulling out my phone and taking a picture of it as well. "But there's only one way to find out." Chapter 4. "I don't like this," Toby said through my phone as I parked in front of Flask's Coffee and cut my engine.
"Me neither," said Bree.
It was 2 days later, and I was on a conference call with all of them. But since Palmer was stage managing, she had to pretend she was paying attention to the play. She had one of her earbuds in, hidden by her hair, and could only say, "Mm-hmm," occasionally.
"Mm-hmm,"
Palmer said, somehow managing to convey great disapproval in two syllables. "Guys," I said, glancing through my windshield to the coffee shop. "There's nothing else. This is my best shot."
"I'm pretty sure this is how kidnapping movies begin," said Toby. "And there's that scene where the girl is going to meet the person who's going to kidnap her, and her friends are like, 'No, don't do it,' but she does it anyway."
"Well, otherwise there would be no movie," Bree pointed out. "But Toby is actually making a point."
"What do you mean, actually?" Toby asked, sounding offended.
"I don't like that you don't know what this job is," Bree said.
"Mm-hmm," Palmer agreed.
I let out a breath as I smoothed down my dress. I didn't love it either, but I really was out of options. In the 2 days since I'd found out I wouldn't be attending the Young Scholars Program, I had tried everything I could to line up something for the summer. I'd been practically laughed out of the career office at school when I'd explained I was looking for something for this summer. None of my other leads had panned out. The parents of the kid looking for a tutor realized pretty quickly that my French wasn't up to par. I could handle my own computer, but couldn't code or work within multiple operating systems. And when I'd called about it, the mother's helper gig had already been filled. Which I was actually fine with, since I didn't love little kids. Finally, I called the vaguely worded listing, and the girl who'd answered, her name was Maya, had seemed thrilled to get my call, and only too happy to meet whenever was convenient for me, causing my pyramid knife scheme sensors to move to high alert. After we'd agreed to meet at Flask's, my favorite coffee shop, and the place where I acquired my daily iced latte, and settled on the time, she'd said goodbye before I could figure out what exactly this job was. "Look," I said, after pulling the phone away from my ear for a moment to check the time. "We're meeting at a coffee shop. I'll call as soon as it's over. It'll be fine."
"Hmm,"
Palmer said.
"I don't know," Toby sighed.
"Aren't you at work?" I asked her. "How are you able to spend this much time lecturing me?"
"I'm just being a caring friend," Toby said, her voice rising. "And..."
There was a pause, and when Toby came back, she was speaking much lower. "Actually, gotta go. Call me later. Don't get kidnapped."
"Me too," Palmer whispered. "Call me."
"Bree?" I asked after they'd both hung up.
"Still here."
"You don't think I have anything to worry about, do you?"
"Nah," Bree said easily.
"Putting a flyer up at the diner is a super inefficient way to go about kidnapping someone." Thanks, B. I'll call you later. Bree said goodbye and I hung up and took a breath before carefully stepping out of the car. I was wearing one of my best dresses, blue with a tight-fitting bodice and slightly flared skirt, along with heels and light, tasteful makeup. I'd printed out a copy of my resume on thick paper stock and was carrying it in a folder so it wouldn't get bent on my way inside. I stepped inside and looked around. The place was half-filled, mostly with people typing on laptops and groups of moms with strollers. There was a girl who looked like she was in her mid-20s, but my eyes skipped over her until I realized she was smiling big at me and waving.
Andy?
I nodded, my hopes plummeting as I made my way over to her table.
Hi,
I said, holding out my hand, feeling myself inwardly groan as she stood up to shake my hand. Her blonde hair had pink tips, and she was dressed casually, jean shorts, tank top, sneakers. Even though it was the very beginning of summer, she was already tan, with tattoos that peeked out from under her tank top straps and twisted up her ankles like vines.
I'm Maya,
she said, smiling at me, revealing slightly crooked teeth. If she thought anything about the fact that I was either seriously overdressed or she was underdressed, it didn't show. She took a seat and I sat across from her, trying to hide the disappointment on my face as I took my resume out of the folder and slid it across the table to her. She looked at it while she took a sip of her blended drink, the kind with whipped cream and sprinkles that always seemed more like milkshakes to me than anything else. I kept this opinion to myself around Palmer, though, who was addicted to the mint java chip flavor. While she was reading it over, I pulled out my phone and sent a quick text to my friends. Normally, I never would have done this during an interview, but it was clear to me already this wasn't an interview that was going to matter. Me. All fine, nothing to worry about.
This looks great,
Maya said, her eyes scanning down my resume as I dropped my phone back in my bag. She looked up at me and her smile faltered, and she glanced back down to the paper for a second.
Walker,
she said, like she was trying to place my last name.
Didn't I?
My dad's a congressman, I said easily, automatically. Maybe that's where you... But a moment later, it hit me that maybe her recognizing my name was not in the normal way people sometimes did. That this probably had more to do with my dad's scandal having taken over the news a few days ago. I said, realizing I wasn't sure how to handle this.
Well,
Maya said, giving me a smile that let me know she probably had seen my dad on TV, but wasn't going to press the issue.
You've got a lot of awesome experience here. I'm surprised you are still looking for a job, actually.
Yes, I started, then hesitated.
My, summer plans changed at the last minute, so I'm at a bit of a loose end.
As soon as I spoke these words, I felt myself cringe. I didn't even know what this job was, let alone if I wanted it. But I knew that you never made yourself seem too available.
Oh man, I know all about that, Maya said, not seeming to realize that I'd violated a core interview technique. Like, I only put up the flyers when one of my best employees quit because she decided to move to Seattle.
She took a long drink, then shook her head.
I think she'll be back, though. Do you know how much it rains there?
So, about the job, I said, trying to steer us back to the reason we were both sitting there, which I was pretty certain was not to discuss weather in the Pacific Northwest.
Right, Maya said, sitting up straighter. Of course. So, I run a dog walking and pet sitting operation I started 2 years ago. It's primarily me and my fiancé and one other employee, along with some people who fill in on an occasional basis.
Oh, I said, nodding, feeling myself start to deflate. Not only did I not have any experience with animals, but I couldn't imagine a single college being impressed that I'd walked dogs all summer. "It's hard work," Maya said, her tone serious. "And it's a lot of responsibility. People are entrusting their pets, members of their family, to our care. Do you have any experience with animals?"
"Yes. In fact, a few days ago, I was... with a dog."
A second too late, I realized what I was doing. I didn't even want this job, so why was I trying to impress her?
"But as long as you like animals and are good with them, everything else can be learned," she said, giving me another big smile. "Just like anything in life."
She looked down at her watch, then back up at me.
"I'm actually going to pick up some dogs for a walk now. Want to come along? You can see if the job's for you."
I hesitated. This was not the job for me. It was even a step below what I'd been thinking I might have to sink to, which was seeing if Flask was hiring baristas. This would be outside, with no air conditioning, and I had a feeling it would involve dealing with a lot of crap, both literal and figurative. And what was worse, I would have nothing to show for it when the summer was over. Also, I was wearing one of my best dresses and 4-inch heels. I was supposed to walk a dog in this?
"Unless you have somewhere to be?" Maya asked, raising an eyebrow.
And maybe that's what did it. The fact that I had nowhere to be. No plans, no structure to my summer whatsoever. Maybe it was that even though I knew, rationally, I didn't want this job, there was still a part of me that wanted to get it. For whatever reason, I found myself sitting up straight and looking her right in the eye.
"I'm totally free," I said. "Let's do it."
"All right," Maya said cheerfully, as she put her SUV in park and smiled at me. "You ready?" I said with difficulty. There was a very large and fluffy dog on my lap. He had clambered into the front seat as soon as we'd picked him up, and he'd sat there the whole ride, shaking slightly, while I'd tried my best to see around him. He had to weigh at least 75 pounds. And at first, Maya had tried to get him to move to the back, saying apologetically,
"I think he's just going to keep coming up, though. Jasper gets scared in cars, don't you, buddy?"
Jasper had whimpered then, like he could understand her, and I tentatively patted his fluffy black fur, feeling him trembling under my hands. It wasn't like I'd had a ton of time to focus on the fact that I was slowly losing feeling in my legs, either, because there were 3 other dogs in the back. We'd driven all over Stanwich picking them up, Maya keeping up a cheerful running commentary as we drove.
"So I have all the keys color-coded," she said, holding up an enormous key ring, the top of each key painted a bright metallic color. "And we keep a log of all the pets, their habits, things to watch out for. It gets a little more complicated when it's pet-sitting, but that's a different conversation. Also, sometimes we take groups out for longer hikes or to the dog beach, but you wouldn't be doing that right away, so don't worry."
"Uh-huh," I said, trying my best to pay attention, but I was distracted by the fact that there were 3 dogs in the back seat, all of whom seemed to be staring at me. What was she supposed to do if one of them started freaking out or something? Wasn't this a huge driving distraction?
"So, you normally do this on your own? Just you in the car with 4 dogs?"
"Oh, no," she said easily, and I felt myself relax. "Usually it's more like 5 or 6.
"What?" I asked, as Maya cut the engine and hopped out of the front door. Jasper seemed to realize this meant he no longer needed to be afraid, and he lumbered over me to climb into the back. I looked down at my lap and saw it was covered with dog hair,
and what looked suspiciously like drool. I shook my head, then got out of the car, brushing off my dress.
"Sometimes dogs get walked alone," Maya said. "Dogs that don't play well with others. And sometimes it's down to scheduling. But Dave, that's my fiancé, and I have a philosophy that dogs are social animals. They're happiest when they're with friends, just like us."
"Okay," I said, even as I was pretty sure this was the opposite of okay. One dog seemed challenging enough, but six? I looked around and realized where I was, what I'd missed with my visibility blocked by Jasper. I was right back where I'd been 2 days ago, just a few streets over from where Dr. Rizzoli lived. I followed Maya around to the other side of the car, wobbling on my heels.
"Here," Maya said, handing me an armful of leashes. "I usually take them off when we drive because it's a choking hazard if they get tangled, but they tend to rush the door and get really excited when they know we're going on a walk, so you have to be careful and make sure they don't go running when you open it."
I nodded, and even as I took the leashes, I was realizing that I'd let this go way too far. My competitive instinct had kicked in, but this was getting ridiculous. Was there a way to turn this around at this point without being rude? I set about untangling the leashes, trying to work through the possibilities. After a moment, I concluded that there was really no way to tell her that she needed to get back in the car, drive me back to the coffee shop, and probably really confuse the dogs as a result. I needed to just get through this, and then I could walk away and never have to tell anyone that I got dressed up to try to be a dog walker. I had a feeling Toby would never let me hear the end of it if she found out. Maya opened the door, and then there was a scramble, with the dogs all barking at once, everyone trying to get out the door first. I handed her the leashes, she snapped them on collars, and then we were standing on the side of the road with four dogs trying to go in four directions. I had ended up with Jasper, even though he was by far the biggest of the dogs. Maya had a pug, some kind of shaggy mutt, and something that looked like a small collie. "Are you okay with him?" she asked, as she arranged the leashes so that all three were in one hand. "Jasper always seems to get tangled with the other dogs, so it's easier if he walks by himself." "Sure," I said, a little uncertainly, wrapping the leash around my wrist once, then once again. I was pretty sure I'd walked a dog before. I had to have, right? I was struggling to remember if I'd ever walked my ex Nathan's dog, when Maya started walking and Jasper, clearly not wanting to be left behind, lunged after her. I ran in my heels to catch up, feeling my feet already protesting. "Great day, right?" Maya asked, looking over her shoulder at me as I caught up with Jasper. "Uh-huh," I said, barely listening as I tried to get a tighter grip on the leash, but I pulled a little too hard and Jasper was yanked back by his neck. I was worried that he would be mad and would lunge again, or worse, start growling or snapping, but he seemed to forgive me instantly, just going back to sniffing the ground. I didn't know how this was going to work with all these dogs, if they'd start to fight with each other or something, but they all seemed pretty well behaved, trotting along in a line. One of them would want to sniff a tree or a rock, and the others would either join in the sniffing or simply sit and wait. Jasper, despite his size, seemed pretty easy to control, responding immediately when I pulled back on the leash. "Here's what I was thinking," Maya said, looking over at me with an easy smile as I glanced up at her briefly, before returning all my attention to Jasper. I didn't understand how she was able to do it. Wasn't this taking all her concentration? She had three dogs in front of her, after all. "We walk them around this loop, And then there's a little grassy area. It's not quite a park, but the dogs love it.
Actually, I started, taking a breath to tell her that we should probably wrap this up quickly since the job wasn't for me, when all the dogs started barking as one. I looked around, wondering if maybe there was a squirrel or something, when I saw there was another dog and owner coming toward us.
So, here's a moment for a lesson, Maya said brightly, though I could tell there was a tiny bit of stress in her voice. When you have a bunch of dogs together like this, they kind of form a pack mentality and can sometimes scare the other dog. Everyone's trying to make friends, they just don't know the best way to go about it.
Okay, I said, tightening Jasper's leash around my wrist again, feeling my heart pound when the barking got louder as the other dog got closer. I squinted against the sun, which was right behind the dog and his owner, blurring them out. When they came into view a moment later, though, I realized I knew them. Both of them. It was the guy and his runaway dog, Birdie, from 2 days before. The guy must have recognized me at the same time, because he smiled and held his hand up to wave, the same hand that was holding his leash. His dog clearly saw his opportunity and took off at a run toward us, as the guy grabbed for where the leash had been but only got empty air.
Okay, Maya said now, her voice raised over the barking of the dogs, who were going into a frenzy, all of them straining against their leashes. I'll try and grab him while you... But whatever she'd been about to say was lost, as Birdie ran right up to me, barking and tail wagging wildly. He tried to jump up on me, which honestly would have been okay. It would give me an opportunity to try to grab his leash. But Jasper seemed to take this as some kind of threat, because suddenly his bark changed from what had been a, "Hi, other dog," bark, to a "Get the hell away from me and the girl with the leash," bark. In between barks, there was now a low growl at the back of his throat, and the other dogs, sensing this, started to bark as well, with a definite note of "back off" in their voices. "It's okay," I said, trying to put myself between the two dogs while feeling this was really not where I wanted to be. "Just... Andy," Maya said, and I could hear the anxiety in her voice, even as it was masked by a layer of cheerfulness. "Stay calm and..." Whatever came next was lost in another wave of barking, as she tried to get closer to me while simultaneously holding back her three dogs, who were all straining against their leashes, trying to get closer to the excitement. I saw the guy finally catch up with his dog, and then everything seemed to happen at once. Birdie jumped up at me again, just as he grabbed the leash to pull his dog back, and Jasper tried to follow. I held on to Jasper's leash as hard as I could, and he was pulled back, making a kind of gagging cough sound, and I silently apologized to him while I wobbled on my heels but managed to regain my balance, thrilled that I'd somehow remained upright. I looked over and saw that the guy was not so lucky. He was on the ground, trying to push himself up to standing, while his dog made matters worse, running in circles around his feet and tangling the leash even further. All the dogs were barking like crazy now, though I was relieved to hear it was back to happy excitement barking and not angry territorial barking. "Hey!" Maya yelled, and then she let out a piercing two-finger whistle. All the dogs stopped barking immediately, and the sudden silence was surprising, like I'd forgotten what it was like not to have that soundtrack. "Sit," Maya said firmly, and her three dogs sat simultaneously. Maya gave Jasper a stern look, and he sat too. She looked at the other dog, who just wagged his tail back at her. "Sit," she said, but the other dog tried to jump up, like he was under the impression it was opposite day. "I'm sorry about that," the guy said. He pushed himself to standing, wincing slightly. He straightened his glasses and looked over at me, and his ears turned bright red again. The guy hadn't gotten any less cute since I'd last seen him, and I was glad he was the one who'd wiped out this time and not me. However, there was now the fact that I was walking dogs in a dress and heels, which I had no doubt looked beyond strange.
"Hey," he said. "Nice to,
But there didn't seem to be anything to follow this, and his cheeks flushed, and he gave me an embarrassed smile. I realized I was staring before I made myself look away. Dimples like that should honestly not be allowed.
"You guys know each other?" Maya asked, shooting me a smile.
"No," I said, at the exact same time the guy said,
"Yeah."
There was an awkward pause that I was about to jump in and fill. It wasn't like it would take all that long, and then we could get back to walking the dogs, when the guy said,
The other day, Birdie got loose, but he was rescued by..."
There was an expectant pause, and I realized he was waiting for my name. "Andy," I said quickly, then shook my head since Maya was starting to look impressed. It wasn't a big deal.
"It was,"
the guy said emphatically, though mostly to the asphalt, not to me.
"I would have been in serious trouble if anything happened to him."
"Birdie, huh?" Maya asked, leaning over to scratch the dog's ears. "Nice to meet you, buddy."
"And I'm Clark," the guy said.
I looked up at him as he said his name. It seemed to hang in the air between us, like I could see it in a cartoon bubble, inked and shaded. I wasn't sure I'd ever met anyone with that name before, and it echoed in my mind for a moment, calling up dark-haired reporters with secret identities and handsome movie stars in black and white. Clark. I decided it fit him, which I realized a second later was ridiculous since I didn't even know this guy.
I thought you said you didn't live around here,"
he said, and I could tell that he was nervous, his voice fading out at the end of the sentence like a radio station getting fainter.
"I don't," I said, looking down at Jasper and trying to mentally communicate that now would be a great time to start walking again.
But Jasper just yawned and scratched his ear with his back paw.
"The thing is..."
I took a breath to start to explain, then stopped when I realized I didn't know what to say. That I was on a job interview for something I wasn't even sure I wanted. Maya jumped in when the silence threatened to stretch from thoughtful to awkward.
"We're taking these guys on a walk."
Are you a dog walker?"
he asked, crossing his arms and then uncrossing them.
"Or do you just have a lot of dogs?"
He was wearing another t-shirt with a slogan on it. This one had what looked like a picture of a British phone box, but blue, and it read, "The Doctor is In." This made about as much sense to me as his other shirt had, but I figured Tom or Bree would know what it meant.
"The former," Maya said, surprising me. I guess I hadn't expected super proper language from her. It seemed to go against the tattoos. "Dave and Maya's pet care. I'm Maya."
"Wow, that's..."
Clark said, and then fumbled with the leash again as Birdie tried to run in the direction of the pug.
"Try looping it," Maya said, holding up one of her wrists. "It helps you get a better grip."
"Thanks,"
he said, doing this immediately and then straightening his glasses.
"I haven't had a ton of experience, you know, with dogs."
Jasper jumped to his feet suddenly, looking directly across the road. Since I couldn't see anything, I wondered if it was just a squirrel, or the hope of a squirrel. Either way, I tightened my grip on his leash, just in case.
"We should get moving," Maya said with a smile,
as she made a noise partway between a clicking and a kissing sound, and her three dogs jumped to their feet.
"See you around," she said cheerfully, and started to head down the street with the dogs.
Clark looked at me, and I met his eyes for a moment, then looked away. Under normal circumstances, I would have been flirting with him, or at least saying full sentences like a competent human being. But under normal circumstances, I wouldn't have been walking dogs in a fancy dress. I wouldn't have been spinning out with no idea of what I was going to do with my summer. And until I figured it out, I knew I shouldn't be flirting with random dog owners, no matter how cute they were. So I gave him a quick nod, then tugged on Jasper's leash, and we turned and walked in the other direction. And even though I was pretty sure I could still feel his gaze on me, I didn't let myself turn my head, or even look back.
"Dog walking?"
Toby asked, her jaw dropping open.
"Like, with actual dogs?"
"Actual dogs," I confirmed, as I looked around the museum courtyard, all marble and palms and a gentle trickling fountain. It surprised me, too. When Maya had asked me if I wanted the job, I'd only hesitated for a moment before saying yes. After we'd left Clark and Birdie, we'd walked the dogs for another 20 minutes, and halfway through, I'd given up and taken off my shoes, holding my heels and walking barefoot on the pavement. Maya slowly gave me more leashes as we walked until I was handling all four dogs by myself. She'd been cheerful and encouraging, even though I had a feeling that my complete lack of experience with dogs had been evident. But I'd been surprised by how peaceful it had been toward the end, when all the dogs had done everything they needed to and sniffed every available tree. When we were all walking in silence and I could feel the sun on my arms and shoulders, I realized that I'd been so focused on making sure the dogs were okay, which was minute-to-minute work, with dangers of cars or squirrels or other dogs around every corner, that I hadn't really been able to think about my own situation, and how nice it had been to get a break from the inside of my head. Toby had seemed thrilled to see me, in person and unkidnapped. And once she verified that I was fine, started complaining about how bored she was. Apparently, it had been a slow day, and since she was still memorizing her docent script, she wasn't able to give any tours. So she had walked around, familiarizing herself with the paintings and sculptures. "So," Toby said, tilting her head as she looked at me.
"Is this a formal dog walking service?"
"Ha ha," I said, glancing down at myself. I'd changed into flip-flops but was still wearing the dress. It seemed easier than going home and changing, and it was going to need to be dry-cleaned anyway.
"I like it," Toby said, gesturing to me with a flourish. "Andy Walker. Dog walker."
I hadn't even put that together until now, and I groaned. "Oh, no," I said, shaking my head. "That sounds like something from one of your romantic comedies."
"Don't knock the romantic comedies."
I looked around the courtyard of the small museum, more than ready to change the subject before Toby could start lecturing me about the merits of Sleepless in Seattle again.
"Want to give me a tour?"
Toby grinned and straightened her blue blazer. I noticed there was a crest with a P on it sewn over one of the lapels.
"Certainly," she said, in her most grave and serious voice. It had dropped about an octave,
and I had to bite my lip to keep from laughing.
"If you'll follow me, miss."
I followed her past the courtyard and into the museum itself, bracing myself as a wave of memories hit me hard. I actually didn't need a tour at all, since I knew the Pierce really well.
My mother had been an artist by training and had volunteered there for years, organizing the kids' art program. I'd spent hours there when I was younger, listening to my mom talk through